So I would like to offer you my thoughts on metta practice tonight, the first of the Brahmaviharas. But as we're beginning our journey together on into these divine abodes, I thought it might be helpful to give you a very brief summary of these other four beautiful qualities that we're going to be exploring in more detail for the next 4 days. And I'm sure most of you know these four. They're loving kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, mudita, which is joy, sympathetic joy, and upekkha, equanimity practice, these four. So in the Pali language, Brahmavihara means the dwelling place of awakened beings. And it's really a metaphor for where the mind of an awakened being would dwell. And so the idea is that if through our practice in our lives, we consciously, constantly nurture and develop these states, make that an intention, eventually we will live in these states. Eventually, we make that our intention. As the teacher, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn tells us, wherever you go, there you are. It's that idea. Wherever you go, there you are. I mean, that's the title of one of his books, but you really don't have to read anymore. That's kind of the main message. So I personally believe that, especially right now, in this time that we find ourselves in history, right now, this moment, nurturing these four qualities is what is desperately needed. We need people who have made a home in these qualities and can offer out these kind, compassionate qualities to the world, so needed right now. So just listen to the way the Theravadan monk Nanyan Ponika Thera, I'm not saying his name right, Nyana Ponika Thera, describes these Brahmaviharas. These four attitudes are said to be excellent or sublime because they are the ideal way of conduct towards living beings. They provide, in fact, the answer to all situations arising from social contact. They are the great removers of tension, the great peacemakers in social conflict, and the great healers of wounds suffered in the struggle of existence. They level social barriers, build harmonious communities, revive joy and hope long abandoned, and promote human brotherhood against the forces of egotism. They promote human brotherhood against the forces of egotism. Sounds like exactly what we need right now, right? And there's been no shortage of attempts to translate the Brahmaviharas into English, and I'll name some of these: the heavenly states, the divine abodes, the radiant emotions, the four immeasurables, the limitless thoughts, the sublime states. And if right now you're thinking, oh my God, I'll never be able to achieve that, I want to gently remind all of us that this is a practice and that awakening also is not a one-time deal. As the Buddha happily assures us, we all have the potential to awaken over and over, again and again. And every moment, in fact, that we can meet our experience with kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity actually is a moment of waking up. Isn't that good to know? So whenever we find ourselves falling back into our old painful mental habits, even this weekend maybe, it can be really helpful to remember that we can always start again. We can always start again. We can always consciously choose to nurture the Brahmaviharas. And this is actually our practice, to see what causes our suffering and to choose its opposite. That's our practice. So it's really the beauty of this practice, having the ability to begin again. And we can see this moment by moment, even in our attempt at watching the breath. We can watch that over and over. We can begin again. And so we can remind ourselves, even when we're focusing on the breath and we've lost it, I can begin again. Okay. I also really love to remember that nurturing the divine abodes is thought to not only lead to enlightenment, but it actually is enlightenment. So it's the path, and it's also the fruition. As the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh tells us, as you practice building a home in yourself, you become more and more beautiful. So to begin, in order for us to build this home, we first need to lay down some foundation. And in our practice, this foundation is metta. That's the foundation. And it's described as loving kindness or unconditional friendliness, goodwill, a wish for others to be happy. And you might also think of metta as the ground or soil. I like to think of it as the ground or soil of these divine abodes. And all the other Brahma Viharas then rise up out of the soil of metta practice. And I love this quote from Longjen Rangjama, 14th century Buddhist monk, which expresses this so beautifully. And by the way, the first time I ever heard this was from Pat. It was so beautiful. It says, out of the soil of metta grows the beautiful bloom of compassion to be watered by the tears of joy under the cool shade of equanimity. I'll read that again. Out of the soil of metta grows the beautiful bloom of compassion to be watered by the tears of joy under the cool shade of equanimity. So what I find helpful is to remember that metta, the deep wish for others to be happy, was also the foundation of the Buddhist practice. And it's actually what first motivated him to begin his search for awakening. So at the very late age of 29, actually, after witnessing finally the suffering of sickness, old age, and death, and after being sheltered for so many years as a prince, Prince Siddhartha, the Buddha to be, chose to leave behind his very privileged life and go out and find a cure for suffering. That was his motivation. So metta practice right there, kindness practice, compassion, that was his motivation. And interestingly, metta is also what motivated him to continue to teach after he decided, after he discovered it. For the good of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world. So metta is our first Brahma Vihara, and out of this main wish for ourselves and others to be happy arises the second, the beautiful bloom of compassion, karuna, which is how we act on this wish, right, for others to be happy. So compassion is what metta or friendliness feels when it encounters suffering. It wants the suffering to end. Okay, our mudita, our sympathetic joy, also arises out of metta, since when we see that the happiness that we desire for others is actually happening, we rejoice. Okay, we experience those tears of joy because our wish for others' happiness is being fulfilled, and we see that. With equanimity practice, the fourth of the Brahma Viharas, what we're doing is offering our metta, our kindness, our friendliness, to both our joys and our sorrows equally. We're offering it to both. So there's that balance, the cool, calm shade in the heat of the sun. Maybe you can remember equanimity practice here on retreat this weekend when they go under a shade of a tree. It's both, offering our metta to both our joys and our sorrows. And so you might think that because we start with metta practice, that maybe it's the easiest, right? Anybody have that thought in the mind? It's a step, it's a layer of, that must be the easiest, metta. But if we're really honest with ourselves, isn't this the practice that is the most difficult, offering ourselves or others kindness, right? Who in here is hard on themselves? Show of hands. Right? I think this one is the most difficult one, actually. And sometimes I find it helpful to remember that it's just part of the water that we're swimming in. And it's also what we're swimming up against. It's the function of what's called causes and conditions that have created who we are which is in a large part very cultural. Our tendency to constantly kind of beat up on ourselves is cultural. Years ago, I read something that Mother Teresa once said that really resonated with me because I felt it was so true. She said, "The greatest disease in the West today is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for. We can cure physical diseases with medicine, but the only cure for loneliness, despair, and hopelessness is love. There are many in the world who are dying for a piece of bread, but there are many more dying for a little love. The poverty in the West is a different kind of poverty. It is not only a poverty of loneliness, but also of spirituality." Yeah. So that might sound a little depressing, but the good news is, and what I want to really emphasize over these next 4 days, is that through our practice, through this practice, we can really change this conditioning. You know, in fact, it goes, as Pat was mentioning, we can actually change the structure of our brains. I love this. So the Buddha assured us of this 2,600 years ago, but scientists are now showing that this is really true, which is so cool. A few years ago back, maybe 4 years ago or so, scientists at the University of Wisconsin-Madison researched a group of people who had practiced the traditional metta meditation, which we'll be doing daily, and discovered that a part of their brains literally grew bigger to make them more compassionate and kind to themselves and others. It was like the Grinch's heart, like think of it that way, just grew bigger and bigger. So if we practice metta, it literally, quite literally, changes our brains. So we can change our conditioning. And of course, this is something we all want and even practice. But because of our cultural conditioning, again, if we're honest, metta is something many of us tend to frequently forget, right? Don't we forget it so easily? You know, what happens, you think about something disturbing that happens to you, what's your first instinct? Is it kindness to yourself or something else? We forget it, right, sometimes. And yet, as the Buddha so wisely and gently reminds us, again, this is a practice, which means it's natural that we're not always going to remember, and that we shouldn't beat ourselves even further when we forget, or during those times, especially when it's really incredibly difficult, which is sadly when we tend to forget the most. We tend to forget about ourselves, being kind to ourselves. Sometimes we're better at giving it to others, but we forget about ourselves. And that always needs to come first. So many of you know that the word metta, I actually got that on my license plate. I was so happy to get it. And one of the reasons I was so thrilled to have that particular tag on my car was because I need that kind of constant reminder too. You know, even though all my days, you know, I teach full time, so this is what did I do? And I still forget it, you know. And before I go into what metta is, I want to share a few thoughts about what it's not. So first of all, nurturing metta is not selfish. It's not a self-centered, belly button gazing type of thing. Okay, we are doing this, again, for the benefit of all, for the good of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world. And so you might think about when you yourself are suffering, just think about that for a moment. You know, is it helpful to be comforted by someone who is also in despair or maybe critical or negative? Is that helpful? And isn't that how we relate to our own mind so often? Or is it more helpful when someone is kind, even though they too may be suffering, when they're kind? Or maybe when you've messed up in some way and they just are sweet and they're there for you. I like the way teacher Sharon Salzberg describes this. She says, for a true spiritual transformation to flourish, we must see beyond this tendency to mental self-flagellation. Spirituality based on self-hate can never sustain itself. Generosity coming from self-hatred becomes martyrdom. Morality born out of self-hatred becomes rigid repression. Love for others without the foundation of love for ourselves becomes a loss of boundaries, codependency, and a painful and fruitless search for intimacy. But when we contact through meditation our true nature, we can allow others to also find theirs. So it is not selfish. I really want to emphasize that because I know it's so hard for many of us to offer ourselves our own kindness. Also, contrary to some of the perceptions out there, practicing kindness is not somehow fluffy or light or weak or sweet or for the tender or the faint of heart. It doesn't invoke for me an image of a soft snowflake, you know, but more of an avalanche that's been built through years and years of practice. Metta practice is fierce. I like to remember that. It's not sweet, it's fierce. Has anybody read the Book of Joy? Anybody? Oh, couple hands. Oh. If you haven't read it, it's an excellent book that chronicles a long conversation between the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And what gave me chills when I was reading it was when the Dalai Lama was making a point about the practice of kindness, which of course involves things like forgiveness and patience and tolerance. And apparently he was really adamant about making his point, and he cut his hand very sharply through the air. You can see the Dalai Lama doing this. He's very fierce about this. He says, it is totally wrong to say that practice of tolerance and practice of forgiveness are signs of weakness. Totally wrong. 100% wrong. 1,000% wrong. Forgiveness is a sign of strength, isn't it? And the Archbishop said, absolutely yes. I was just going to say that those who say forgiveness is a sign of weakness haven't tried it yet. Yeah. So it really takes a lot of courage and strength and energy and commitment to practice kindness, both for ourselves and for others. Being a bully, being unkind or cruel or even vengeful, does not involve a lot of effort or even mindfulness practice. It's actually the opposite of this. It's much more base, animalistic. It's an animalistic response that is based largely on a sense of self or ego. And the Dalai Lama has said, quote, there are certain people who act out of the animal mind. When someone hits them, they want to hit back and retaliate. And what this means is that being unkind is really our most base reaction. It doesn't involve any effort or mindfulness or the consciousness that's really required to develop patience and empathy and forgiveness and understanding. And all of these capacities, of course, involve working on letting go of ego or self, and connecting to that sense of unity or non-separation, anatta in Sanskrit. So not easy, not easy. In our Western society, especially, I think it's crucial that we train our hearts and minds to go against what I feel is a very strong current of things like perfectionism. Okay, these are conditions in our culture. Perfectionism, harsh judgment of ourselves and others, competition, comparison, right? Have you done any of these today? Compared, needing to be perfect, judging yourself. It's constant, and I want you to remember it's just the water that we're swimming in. It's conditioned. It seems like we're all in some way defending our team, even if our team is a sense of self. And metta is actually, besides being the first Brahma Vihara, it's the most powerful. It's the most powerful of the Brahma Viharas, but because it can overcome all the states that accompany the biggest delusion and source of our suffering, our deepest wounding, which is a sense of being separate, right? So you might notice that whenever you're feeling separate, you're also feeling fear, okay? And there's a lot of that being fostered right now, right? Fear of other, fear, separateness. It's toxic. So just for a moment, I want you to get a sense of this. So I'm going to invite you just very briefly to close the eyes. It's going to be really brief. And just taking in a couple of breaths. And I want you to start repeating the word trouble in the mind over and over. Maybe recalling some things in your life that make you feel this way. Trouble. 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 Stay with it. Trouble. Trouble. And as you're repeating this word and sensing it, you might notice, is there any sense of separateness? Or maybe fear? Just sense what happens to the body and mind, heart, with the word trouble. And now instead of trouble, start repeating the word kindness. 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 And see if you can sense it in your body and your heart, and just notice what happens. Kindness. Is there also maybe a sense of connection in the kindness? Kindness. Okay, so you can open your eyes. Anybody get a sense of that, the difference? Look just a little bit. I know that was very brief, very brief. So I find it interesting to recall that the Buddha actually first taught the meditation as an antidote to fear. By the way, there's two antidotes to fear. The first is loving kindness. The second is gratitude. So if you're feeling fear this weekend, you might start just being grateful for the present moment, you know, and also offer yourself kindness. I think many of you likely know this story because I tell it often, my regular students. But in the Buddha's very first teaching on metta, he sent a group of monks out to meditate in a forest that was apparently inhabited by tree spirits. Anybody know this story? Who knows? Who doesn't know this story? Okay, good. So these tree spirits apparently were really pissed off because these monks were in their space, you know, and they had invaded their home. Like, what are these monks doing here in our beautiful forest? And so they tried to drive them away, and, you know, they appeared as terrible shrieking noises and ghostly visions and awful smells like tree farts. They were just really mean to these monks. And the tradition says that the monks got really terrified or fed up, you know, sick of being farted on by the trees, I guess. And they ran back to the Buddha and they begged him, please, you know, these trees hate us. Can you please send us to another practice, another forest, so we can do the practice? And the Buddha said, no, you know what? I'm going to send you back to the same forest, but I'm going to provide you with some ammunition, and it's going to be the only protection that you're going to need. And so the monks were like, oh, good. You know, like maybe he's going to give us saws or fire or like a herd of beavers or something, you know. And what the Buddha did was to encourage the monks to recite and practice the metta phrases over and over. And he said, don't practice in a way that it's simply an affirmation or an incantation, but actually, I want you to practice developing loving kindness for these tree spirits, these trees that are being so awful to you. I want you to practice being kind to them. And so the monks did that. They went back and they practiced metta, loving kindness for these trees. And apparently, the tree spirits became so moved by the beauty of this loving energy filling the forest that they resolved to care for the monks in all ways. And what this really points to, I think, is that what unites us all as human beings and even all the plants and animals, just like those trees, is a yearning for union, overcoming our feeling of separateness, which is, again, our deepest wounding. So union, our yearning for union. And the interesting part of this is we already belong, actually. We are all a part of each other, but we feel separate because of our strong conditioning, because of our fear. So you might just think of all the atrocities that have happened in our history and all the atrocities that are happening now, even. Don't they all stem from the sense of fear? Just something to think about this weekend. It all stems from a sense of other and a sense of fear. It's us versus strange or unreal other, as Tara would say. So fear is actually the root of all of our negative emotions, and it's also, of course, the most deeply rooted, which is why this practice takes so much patience and effort, because what we're doing is trying to restrain our base, almost primitive reaction, which again is based on protecting our sense of self or our egos. Okay? So, how do we do it? How do we actually practice metta, loving kindness? So, as with everything else in practice, we begin with ourselves, and we begin here with our formal practice, allowing and being kind to whatever arises. So, no matter what it is, even our negative thoughts or our emotions or our physical pain, okay? And so, we are in essence agreeing to be with all of our messiness with great kindness. Again, just like a friend might stay with us, a really good friend, when we're just a mess and we're flipping out about something. It's that friend, right? And this practice is actually how we learn to love ourselves, how we develop the capacity to also love others who are also less than perfect. It starts with our own practice. It starts with us. It's often also really helpful for me to remember that the root meaning of metta is mitra, which means friend. So it's actually the foundation, mitra, of all our metta practice, which is that we start by learning to be our own best friend. That's where we start. So during meditation practice, as we start to calm and clear the mind a bit, what happens is that we're going to start to see the conversations that we've been having with ourselves all day. They become more and more clear. And some of the things that we say to ourselves, if you think about it, we really wouldn't say even to our best friend, right? It's like probably not even to a stranger sometimes, some of the things that we find ourselves saying to ourselves. And so often the first stage of practice is that we begin to notice these things, notice what we're saying to ourselves, notice what we've been believing, notice our habit of thought. This is a habit, habitual thought, right? And then we can learn to change it. How do I really want to speak to myself? What could I say that would be kind instead in my mind? Or how could I think about this pain or this situation or whatever it is? How could I think about this differently that would bring more kindness to it? I want to stop here just for a moment and suggest that sometimes this is just really difficult, isn't it? It sounds so easy, but it's so hard because sometimes we just can't escape ourselves, can we? It's like we really want to be saying nice things to ourselves or about something. We just can't do it, right? In this case, we can also use our practice to intentionally find what my dear friend Mary Vantavander, another IMCW teacher, who also, by the way, studied with Pat, we studied together, Mary Vantavander. She says, sometimes we just need good company. She says, in the midst of the most painful, confusing, difficult emotions, the heart needs good company, a friend, a poem, a walk in the woods, a cup of tea. The feeling cannot be left alone with the unkind opinion of its feeler. Until we can access that within ourselves, we need to find compassionate companionship. So we can mindfully choose to be kind to ourselves in other ways, to kind of gently help ourselves along until we can let go of our unkind opinion of ourselves or others or, again, a particular situation. So I'm going to even suggest that this week, if you need to, you just can't let it go. You're gripped. You know, we all know that place where we just are gripped. We can't be nice to ourselves, can't let go, of that situation or that thing someone said or whatever it is. And in this case, you know, find good companionship. And since we can't talk, this companionship might just, again, be a walk or a cup of tea or something comforting until you're ready again to look at it. Another root meaning of metta besides friend is gentle, gentle. And it's often likened to a gentle rain that falls upon the earth. And the Buddha taught us, as rain falls equally on the just and the unjust, do not burden your heart with judgments, but rain your kindness equally on all. As rain falls equally on the just and the unjust, do not burden your heart with judgments, but rain your kindness equally on all. And so the idea here is that the rain doesn't select and choose. I'm going to rain over here, but not over there, and I'm going to avoid that person, but rain on everything else except for that. No. It falls without discrimination. And so we practice bringing kindness to all those parts inside of ourselves that we don't like. Okay, we start with that. We start with the judgments and the negative thoughts. And we even practice being kind to ourselves for having those thoughts in the first place, remembering, again, that they come from causes and conditions. And so our practice is not just about having an acute awareness of things, but how we're doing this. So we are asked specifically to extend a friendliness metta to whatever is arising. And as we continue to practice this way, what we're doing is cultivating an ability to embrace all parts of ourselves, even those parts that we just don't want to embrace, those parts we find ugly or yucky about ourselves, right? Things that we wish were different, we embrace those, as well as the difficult parts of our world and the people in it and what happens in it. That's the harder part. Right? So we start with us. And by the way, this doesn't in any way mean that kindness is a kind of covering over or a sugarcoating. This is so important. You know, we're not using the practice to fool ourselves into believing the situation is better than it is. We don't put a happy face on it, you know, and say, oh, there it is, it's okay, put a happy face on it. That's not what metta is. We're also not trying to think or speak in a sweet way in order to hide or cover over what's difficult. You know, for instance, if there's a big, steamy, stinking pile of dog whatever on the sidewalk, we don't just cover it over with flowers and say it's fine. it still stinks, right? So we're instead becoming more willing to open up to the full depth of our human experience, as Jon Kabat-Zinn would call the full catastrophe, all of it. And this is only possible if we have a kind, compassionate response to pain. Metta practice is really then, it's an allowing. I love that word allow. Metta is allowing, holding whatever's here with kindness rather than with aversion. As Pema Chodron, one of my favorite Buddhist nuns, so wisely said, without loving kindness, staying with pain is just warfare, right? Without loving kindness, staying with pain is just warfare. I also like to remember that the metta practice, I think, is essentially the A of the traditional rain practice. Who knows the rain practice here? Almost everybody. So metta is the A, it's the allow part, right? And recognize, for as a review, again, it's recognize, is the R. I recognize that this is happening. The A is allow, which means I'm allowing this feeling, whatever it is in my heart, to be here. I'm pissed, I'm angry, I'm grieving, I'm sad, I'm whatever it is, we allow it. And then we investigate with intimate attention, and we don't investigate intellectually. There's another I. We investigate the heart and the feeling. And we say, feeling, what are you saying? Feeling, we investigate the heart. And then, of course, the N is resting in natural awareness and nurture. And what I've noticed over the many years with students is the tendency to jump over the A. We jump over the A, which is the most important part. So it's like we go right to the I, the investigative. We see something's happening. I recognize that this is really shitty. How do I fix it? Right? We jump over it. So this is really about trying to fix rather than allowing and being with. So you might even notice that this weekend if you've jumped over your heart and not spent time with the metta practice. And of course, this being with is the tricky part. It's that counter, this is a counterintuitive part of the practice. We don't want to stay with the uncomfortableness. We just don't want to do it, you know, or even be kind to it. We just want to make it stop and make it different than it is. But the key to transformation is to be with, to lean into, and get to know very intimately, get to know that uncomfortableness with great kindness and patience. And in this patience, what we're doing in essence is planting a seed, an intention, and then agreeing with ourselves to do whatever it takes to cultivate a loving attitude towards ourselves or others, no matter how long it takes, no matter what. And the Dhammapada, the Buddha tells us, do not underestimate good, thinking it will not affect you. Dripping water can fill a pitcher drop by drop. One who is wise is filled with good, even if one accumulates it little by little. So finally, I just want to point out that, again, because of our strong conditioning, often when we start practicing metta, what happens is the exact opposite feelings actually start to arise. So then the practice becomes, can I bring metta kindness to the painful feeling within me, this painful feeling that has arisen? Or can I bring a kind of acceptance, allowing, and a kindness to the difficulty or to the aversion itself? We can actually bring kindness to the aversion, which is interesting. So you might also plant the seed of inquiry for a time together, which is, what would be wrong with accepting myself just as I am in this moment? What would be wrong with accepting myself just as I am right now in this moment? So just for the last few minutes, to end, I'm just going to invite you into just a brief, very brief, couple-minute meditation practice. So invite you to close your eyes. And for this time of practice right now, what I'm going to invite everyone to do is place a hand on the heart and a hand on the belly, and go ahead and breathe into the fingers. Feel the body and the breath moving. And there's so much science around, there's a practice most of you may know called Reiki, that we can offer ourselves kindness right through our own hands to get a better sense of kindness, that energy. So see if you can offer your own heart, your kindness, right through your hand. Kind of sensing the hands holding you. You can almost imagine rays of light or bright, brilliant warmth from your hands, kindness entering the heart, embracing whatever's here, whatever it is. This belongs. There are several phrases that I like to use when I'm practicing allowing. One of them is simply, this is it. This is what's happening right now. This is it. Sometimes there's a sense of, it's like this. It's like this. And another one I love is, this belongs. This belongs. And again, you might also plant the seed of inquiry for our time together, which is, what would be wrong with accepting myself just as I am right now in this moment? What would be wrong with accepting myself just as I am in this moment? And finally, listening to these words with the eyes closed from Babaji, the contemporary Indian master, who writes, "My beloved child, break your heart no longer. Each time you judge yourself, you break your own heart. You stop feeding on the love which is the wellspring of your vitality. The time has come, your time, to live, to celebrate, and to see the goodness that you are. Let no one, no thing, no idea or ideal obstruct you. And if one comes, even in the name of truth, forgive it for its unknowing. Do not fight. Let go and breathe into the goodness that you are."
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.